From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the legislative and political director for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. And as promised, we are having a special treat for you today. I'm here with our executive vice president, Ivan Butts. How you doing, Ivan?
Hey, Bob. How you doing? Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah, Happy New Year. We're recovering from the first day of the year, and we're all primed and ready to go for 2020. Now, as we promised, what we've done is we've solicited questions from NAPS members, and Ivan and I selected a number of questions that our members wish to be answered, and we're going to do it for you right here online on our NAPS Chat podcast. But before we do that, this engagement that we're having, Ivan, with our members, and we need more engagement from our members, the reason being that we're going to have to educate not only sitting members of Congress, but also challenges, folks that we may not know about out there in the field. We've already found out that 27 sitting members of Congress will not be seeking re-election in November. The average number of retirees is around 23, so it's an uptick with we don't know what their families have told them of the remaining members of Congress over the holiday break. There may, in fact, be more retirements over the first quarter before the primary season starts, right?
Yeah, there very well could be, Bob. And like you said, we have 27 who have announced they are not going to seek re-election. And then we don't know what's going to absolutely happen in the elections in November. Plus, you know, we really need to stay engaged. You know, we have our LTS is coming up, so let me get my blast out, my shout out for our LTS. The registration website is open for registration March 8th to the 11th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. Please go on and register. It's going to be extremely important that we have our turnout of delegates that can hit the Hill with us on Tuesday to talk to this Congress that we currently have on very important issues that not only impact the Postal Service and the sustainability of our agency, but also impact EAS. I think we've been working in the past few months trying to get this initiative for changes to Title 39 voiced and out. We've received a lot of great feedback from legislators. Our new chairman, Representative Maloney, Representative Conley. We even had some discussion with Representative Boss, who's not on our committee, but who has shown some supportive interest in the bill, if we can get it done. So we're going to need some real help out there with members' boots on ground at LTS 2020.
Okay, Ivan, let's go to our first question. And this question is from June from Branch 526 in Virginia. First, she commends NAPS on producing NAPS Chat. So thank you, June. But she asked this question: do you think it will be possible to set up some type of virtual training, teleconference, web chatting to assist small branches who cannot afford to send their members to training?
Well, thank you. First, thank you, June, for that question. That is a great question, and I say yes. I love the technology that we have available to us nowadays, that we can do a lot of things. Bob can, he can do Skypes. He's done he's done a pre-recorded webinar on our SPAC contributions. So there are different tools and a lot of tools available to us that we can use to do some kind of online education and online training and create that contact for maybe some smaller branches who can't get members out to a LTS or national convention. So now, we'll continue to look at that.
Now, Ivan, over your left-hand shoulder, what do you get? What do you see there in our studio?
Yeah, I see he has a camera already set up on his tripod. So, again, I guess, you know, we're going to be moving into this video age now with some of the things that we're doing shortly.
So NAPS members will not have an excuse for not seeing Ivan make a presentation or Brian or Chuck right here from the home office so we could Skype into or webcam into you in the not-too-distant future. So I think what you ought to do is communicate directly with us to see what your needs are, and that is as part of our engagement. Now, next question is from Sharon from Branch 921 from Louisiana, and she asks, and it concerns the Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA. What she asks is, when will EAS receive overtime pay?
Well, I guess need to just kind of have some a little explanation on and what we're talking about. Currently, some EAS working in various management positions do receive overtime pay. EAS have been categorized as FSLA exempt or special exempt. Now, special exempt is a postal term. It was actually created by the Postal Service. It's not a term that, or not a category that's used under FSLA, excuse me. Special exempt EAS do receive additional hours, which we call T time or Code 35 time. So information on FLSA can be found in the ELM in Chapter 440, and also the DOL, Department of Labor, produces fact sheets to assist in explaining what FLSA is. The following fact sheets would be of interest on this subject, and it's fact sheet number 17B, which is the exemption of executive employees under the Fair Labor Standards Act, and then fact sheet 17D, which is the exemption of professional employees under the Fair Labor Standards Act. So those are some resources that you can kind of look up to look up the general issue of what is exempt, what is non-exempt, which, again, you know, the postal, that's the terms of FLSA, is exempt or non-exempt, but the Postal Service has created this special exempt that allows EAS supervisors in the field to get additional hours for any overtime hours. Now, does that mean, you know, we will see time and a half overtime come back again across the board for EAS? I don't think so, because the FLSA has made the determination of what is considered management that wouldn't be eligible for time and a half, and what are management positions that would be.
It's my recollection that prior to the Marvin Runyon being Postmaster General, there was a degree of overtime pay for certain EAS level employees.
Yes. At one time, it was all EAS. Right. We all were receiving time and a half overtime or supervisory, and then all the managerial position, other managerial positions. And then there's a time that the FSLA came in and did a review, and then the Postal Service made us all non-exempt. Mm-hmm. And then they had to come back and made the special exempt for the frontline supervisors. But then they had to, a few years after that, they have to come back and reevaluate even some of the managerial positions that they had made non-exempt and had to turn around and made them exempt, and then had to turn around and make them non-exempt, which made them again eligible for time and a half overtime.
Yeah, it's my understanding the Fair Labor Standards Act, which covers most employees, privately employed and government employees in the United States, basically is geared towards non-managerial, non-supervisory workers. And in the regulations, it defines those folks as supervising two or more employees. Those folks that are sort of supervising less than two traditionally have been non-exempt. That means covered under the Fair Labor Standards Act, meaning they, if they work over a 40-hour work week, they would be required time and a half. And tee time, as I understand it, is straight time, because with the exception of tee time, managerial and supervisor employees would not be permitted to work more than 40 hours per work week and get compensated for it.
That is correct. So that was the kind of the and other federal agencies have done that too with their frontline supervisors. They created a V pay or things so that those supervisors who do supervise employees can get some type of compensation for extra hours that they do work.
Scott from Branch 300 in Wyoming asks a question specifically about tee time. So I move it here, the question here, because it follows the time and a half in overtime pay. And Scott from Branch 300 in Wyoming asks, When can we get rid of tee times for supervisors?
Yeah, and I have to say I agree with Scott in his question about getting rid of tee time. I mean, you know, I agree 100% with that. However, we need to remember that tee time is a postal process that creates this special exempt status, so frontline supervisors can get extra pay for extra hours they work. So, again, I just want to reiterate that under FSLA rules, there is no such thing. There is only two categories, exempt and non-exempt. So what we're calling a special exempt under the Postal Service actually would be an exempt status under FSLA rules and not warrant any type of compensation for extra hours worked.
Now we have a question from Jaime from Branch 589 from Texas. And he asks, due to the passing of former Chairman Elijah Cummings, former chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, who's the new chair of the House Oversight and Reform Committee?
Thanks for that question, Jaime. And Jaime is our NAPS Texas Area Vice President, serving on the National Executive Board. So definitely want to, again, show him the honor of that position and for what he's doing in his leadership role with our association. But with the passing of Elijah Cummings, I mean, no doubt that we lost a great champion for postal employees, a great champion for federal workers. He was serving on our committee at the time of his passing as the chairman of the House Oversight and Reform. And again, always looking to better the life of the working lives of federal employees and to include postal employees. So, I mean, his loss was a tremendous loss. We have Representative Carol Maloney, a Democrat from the 12th District in New York. She has served on the committee of Oversight and Reform for her whole tenure in Congress. So we've met with her, Bob, Bruce, have met with her already to again, open those doors of communications. We always were engaged with her at some point every year because, again, she's always been on our committee and has always worked with NAPS and always been a supporter of NAPS. We have already gotten her firm support of the things when we start talking about Title 39 and the things we want to do, she's 100% on board with that already. So I think we're going to develop that relationship into a new champion or a new committed chairman that's going to be our champion, just as Elijah Cummings was. But, you know, and again, we still have, you know, numerous champions with us on this on the board. So we got Eleanor Holmes Norton. We got Jerry Conley. We got Stephen Lynch. We got Brenda Lawrence. I mean, you know, we have a tremendous amount of support on the committee already. And we'll just what we need to do is continue to grow those relationships that we have and then establish new relationships with others on the other side of the aisle, which I'll talk about in answering another question later.
I just want to reiterate that what you just said, that, yes, the loss of Elijah Cummings is an irreplaceable loss to the committee and to the Congress and to our nation. But there are those who will be continuing who have championed NAPS causes, as the folks that you mentioned, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Jerry Conley, Steve Lynch, Brenda Lawrence. So they are still here. They still are our champions, though, of course, you know, the loss of Mr. Cummings is immeasurable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I look forward to us recruiting even more champions by the touch points that we're making, not just here in D.C., but the touch points you're making out there in the field when you're letting us know about local events that we could send you to meet with legislators in their home district.
Yeah. And let me mention that Jaime, who asked this question, in fact, is engaging with a candidate for Congress in an open seat in Texas, and he has actually met with that candidate, Gina Ortiz-Jones,
yes,
who is running in a district that's being vacated by a moderate Republican member of Congress, Will Hurd. So talk about engagement, Jaime is engaging with a candidate for Congress before they're even here. And that's establishing a relationship which, if she wins, if Gina Ortiz-Jones wins her election, she will remember our support.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of things we need to do. That's the kind of outreach we need to do. I appreciate Jaime for the work that he has done so far in reaching out and having a sit down with her. We had a coffee with her up here already also. But that's the things that creates the bond that we need across the board with legislative leaders as we grow. We did that tremendously with Ms. Oxtero Small last cycle of election. So, you know, those are the things that we have to do. We need to get out there, support candidates. We brought a lot of new candidates in, again, just to kind of refresh our memory. We had a 92%, over 92% efficiency rating on candidates we supported winning the election. So, you know, that's what we need to do, again, looking towards 2020. And you're a key part of that out in the field.
Okay, another next question is from Teresa from Branch 299 in North Carolina. And it concerns there's been a recent announcement of a new Board of Governor nominee from Kansas, Mr. Collar. Teresa asks, what is the current Board of Governors partisan makeup? What's the politics of the current Board of Governors? And she follows up by asking, what is the importance of the Board of Governors on postal operations, including policies and rates?
Okay, so, you know, just for a little history about the Board of Governors. So our Board of Governors for the Postal Service is comparable to a Board of Directors in a publicly held corporation. The board normally consists of up to 9 governors appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate. The 9 governors select the postmaster general, who becomes a member of the board. And those 10 then select the deputy postmaster general, who serves on the board. The postmaster general serves at the pleasure of the governors for an indefinite term, and the deputy postmaster general serves at the pleasure of the governors and the postmaster general. The challenge is we haven't had a full board in some time. Currently, I believe the political makeup, when you look at political, is 3-2 Republican. So our chairman, Robert Duncan, we all know, and I've stated when I talk to people out in the field, when I go and visit other people, we should know Robert Duncan came to us from Tennessee Valley Association. And then we all know the last leader we had that came from the Tennessee Valley
Authority,
Tennessee Valley Authority was Marvin Runyon.
We started with that conversation about the elimination of overtime pay. We contribute that to Marvin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was a part of a big restructuring of the Postal Service when he came in as the Postmaster General at that time. So, you know, but again, we do have champions. We do have some stalwarts on the board, Dave Williams being one of them, former chief inspector of the OIG. He serves as co-chair of the board. So, you know, but we have a lot of support, not just on that board, but we do have support of America. So that is the makeup. But as far as what they do, as far as the policies they set, the board does, you know, they do do a lot of approving. They direct and exercise of powers of the Postal Service, directs and controls the expenditures. They review our practices. They conduct long-range planning, set policies on postal matters. They take up matters such as service standards, capital investments, and facilities that exceed $25 million. So, and it also approves officer compensation. So, but as far as rates, they do put together a rate case, and then but that has to go to another body also. That has to go to our PRC, Postal Regulatory Commission, and the commission is an independent agency that has exercised regulatory authority over the Postal Service since its creation by the Postal Reorganization Act of 1970, with expanded responsibility under PAEA in 2006. So this commission is comprised of five commissioners, each of whom is appointed by the president, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, for terms of 6 years. Currently, that makeup is coincidentally 3-2 towards the Republican.
Let's get back to the Board of Governors. Probably the most consequential decision that the Board of Governors is going to make in the near term will be the hiring of a new Postmaster General. And that will have very significant implications to the Postal Service and its employees. In fact, I believe there was a recent magazine article which sort of was speculated that if the new PMG is not too strong on universal accessible government-run postal service, we could see the dawning of the era of a privatization of the United States Postal Service.
Yeah. So we know Megan Brennan, our 74th Postmaster General, announced her retirement, I think, in late November. That she was going to be retiring effective January 31st. And we know that the Postal Services or the Board of Governors is conducting a nationwide search for the next PMG. And we don't know who that is as of yet. We really haven't heard anything. You always try to keep your ear to the rail up here in D.C. to kind of hear what's going on. We really haven't heard anything. But Bob is right. I think a lot of us, or at least some of us, might have seen that Forbes report that came out last week talking about how privatization could come to the Postal Service as early as next month. Now, we don't know that to be true. We kind of read, in reading the article, the things that the writer has put down are things that we've known for years, things that we have talked about over many years when talking about privatization of the Postal Service. So, but in saying that, again, we will be prepared and we will do our due diligence. I think one of the things that I've talked about when I'm out in the field and I'll talk about now is that we have the support of America. We are continuously the most trusted agency in the federal government by America. Continuously. So, you know, those things are huge. They're key to our support. Our customers who we serve are very vocal to our legislative leaders when issues come up for the Postal Service. So we're continuing to rely on that and have that support as we go forward.
Now, Robert from Branch 406 in Florida has a good follow-up question, and that is, what is our biggest concern about privatization of the United States Postal Service?
Well, for me, it's the deterioration of the connectiveness that the Postal Service brings to America throughout our country. A privatization would render America to pay exorbitant rates just to receive basic and basic mail services, even worse, and that would be even worse for rural America, and could subjugate them to no service at all or require them to travel to get their mail. I mean, and like I said earlier, America has spoken loud and clear on the United States Postal Service. We are the most trusted federal agency by America's standards. America wants us to visit them 6 days a week, even seven if we want. America is not in favor of privatization or deterioration of service in delivery days or door-to-door service. So by us knowing these things, and our legislators have shown in this session that their feelings are the exact same by the various House resolutions that they have brought forth to address those very issues.
And there's a Senate resolution also on privatization, and both the anti-privatization resolutions in the House and the Senate carry overwhelming bipartisan opposition to privatization.
Correct. So the vehicle is there for us, right? That's why it's so important that we come up here in masses in March for our LTS. So we can take advantage and we can take this vehicle and drive it up on the Hill and drive it door to door to legislative leaders and bring this point home and bring our support to this bubble of we're going to keep a United States Postal Service that's going to serve America, not just here, but abroad, as it has done since its inception.
Now, Robert did ask a follow-up question. We know that it's going to take heroes to fight for our postal service on Capitol Hill and politically. And so Ivan, a lot of our folks believe you are a superhero. So the question that Robert has is, who is your favorite superhero?
Bobby, for that question. And I don't feel any way like a hero. I'm humbled to do the work that I do for our members, and I'm blessed to be able to do it. If I had to choose my favorite hero, superhero, is maybe kind of an anti-hero. It would be Wolverine.
Wolverine, the claws.
The claws, absolutely, the claws.
So let me ask you this question. I'm going to follow up on that. Your favorite superhero is Wolverine. Mm-hmm. If you were to be a superhero, would it also be Wolverine, or would it be another superhero?
Yeah, I'd be Wolverine.
Oh, you're going to stick by Wolverine?
Yeah, I like Wolverine.
Like Wolverine?
Yeah. He take a hit, he can heal himself, you know, go on attack. He got the sharp claws.
Okay. That's Ivan. Now everyone knows when they come to LTS, just call Ivan Wolverine. He'll be real happy.
No, I like Teddy Bear better.
Teddy Bear. Not Grizzly Bear, Teddy Bear. Okay. Our next question, in fact, this is our last question, and it's from Jimmy from Branch 100 in New York. And it concerns partisanship and politics. NAPS keeps asking Congress to support bills, yet those bills are not enacted, Jimmy. And that's accurate. Most of the bills that we have been supported are not being enacted. He also references that SPAC primarily supports Democratic incumbents and challenges. The question is, what about more active SPAC support of moderate Republicans? Now, I would just ask for an editorial. That is a dwindling class of members of the Republican Party. But does Jimmy have a point?
Yes, he does. He does to a degree. And Jimmy Warden also serves on our National Executive Board. He's the New York area vice president. So I appreciate him and appreciate the work he does, not just on the board, but certainly for his members of his NAPS area. So, again, I know there's this assumption that as an association, you know, we support Democrats, and Democrats are the Labor Party, so that's how we kind of move our issues, our kind of labor, and I've said that before. But that doesn't mean we don't engage the Republican Party. I believe we do reach out to them in good faith, as always. NAPS has supported moderate Republicans who support views of a sustainable post office. But as you just said, Bob, that is a dwindling number of Republicans right now. It's about 70 of Republicans that would identify themselves as moderate Republicans. And as you know, Bob, we just recently met with Representative Antonio Gonzalez and Representative Mike Boss. And we're hoping to have Representative Boss come to and speak at the 2020 LTS delegates. So as we move forward in 2020, NAPS will look even more closely at support Republican leadership as we look at addressing some labor issues that we have recently arisen, and hope that this will help to springboard some further connectiveness of NAPS with both sides of the aisles of the both sides of the legislative aisle.
That's right, and you know, and I do think, you know, we're reaching out to folks from both parties, and we have candidate questionnaires, and we are sort of party blind when we evaluate the candidate questionnaires, and we look forward to working with members of Congress from whatever political party they hail from.
Absolutely. And we look forward to it again. And as I've always encouraged and will continue to encourage, is that if you're engaging legislative leaders local, whether they're Democrat or Republican, and you're having these positive engagements with us, or you're hearing about events that you want to go to or you think would be profitable for NAPS to go to and engage these leaders, then let us know. Again, we're heading into 2020, which is an election year. So we're going to have to be active, and this is my pitch for SPAC. I appreciate all you've done for SPAC this year, all you're going to do next year. But, you know, this is a time where those SPAC dollars come in to great use for us, that we can get out here and we can support candidates that we want, that's candidates that support us and want to help us move our agendas forward and help them to get reelected or help them to get elected to seats. So, again, when you're out in the home district and you hear an event and you believe that person is someone who will be supportive of NAPS, the views of NAPS and the concerns of NAPS, let us know. We would like nothing more than to send a group of you to an event to sit down with that legislative leader and let them know who NAPS is and what we stand for.
With that, Ivan, I'm going to wish you a pleasant day, and again, to wish all of our listeners a happy new year, and think about, for them, as they approach this year, to think about what superhero they want to be in support of the Postal Service. With that, have a great day. Have a great weekend.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna